May it please the court, I am Richard Grossman and I represent the appellant, Deborah Gurbich. This is, or it should be, a simple workers' compensation case, an appeal from the Labor and Industrial Relations Commission. The only issue before this court is whether or not the deceased employee's spouse and sole surviving dependent is entitled to his benefits pursuant to Shamel versus Treasurer of Missouri. It is undisputed that the appellant's spouse, the employee Gary Gurbich, was injured in April of 2006, filed his claim in May of 2006, and eventually was determined to be permanently and totally disabled. That is undisputed. It is also undisputed that the appellant was his sole surviving dependent. So one must ask, why are we here? Because it's clear that the appellant is entitled to benefits pursuant to this court's decision in Shamel versus Treasurer and Straight versus Treasurer, and the statutes as they existed at the time of Gary Gurbich's injury. Both of these cases interpreting those statutes were decided prior to the award by the ALJ and the commission in this case, and prior to the death of the appellant's spouse.
What's your authority for us looking at what the law was at the time of the injury versus what the law was at the time that the trial took place and the employee himself died?
It is well settled law that, and I can read straight from the Klotz case, it is settled law in Missouri that the legislature cannot change the substantive law for a category of damages after a cause of action has accrued. And that's not just in the Klotz case. That violates Article 1, Section 13 of the Missouri Constitution as well.
So you're basing your argument on that these rights vested at the time of the injury.
That's correct.
But we're dealing with unaccrued benefits, not accrued benefits. So how can their rights to those have vested?
Well, the right to all their benefits vested on the date of the injury.
That's what the definition of dependent. You have to have been a dependent at the time of the injury, but that's not sufficient for you to win. For instance, if your children are dependents at that time, but if they've reached the age of majority, by the time the person dies, they don't get a recovery. They don't step into his shoes. The same is true if someone remarries. So that's simply necessary. It's not sufficient.
Well, that is a way for them to lose those benefits, to be divested of those benefits per the statute. But the statute
Where do you see, because the only way dependents have a right to these benefits is the statute says at the death of the employee, the dependents step into the shoes of the employee. So don't we then look at that definition at the time of death to see who gets to step into shoes and what is meant by employee? And the legislature changed by the time of the death, changed the law to say that employee no longer includes dependents. But until the person died, the dependents did not step into the employee's shoes. That only occurs upon the employee's death. And at that point, they no longer could.
Well, 287.240, subsection 4, defines, which is used for the entire chapter 287, says that the dependency is determined on the date of the injury. Court in Shamel said the same thing. The date of injury is what determines the dependency.
So Shamel's analysis wasn't based on any kind of vesting rights. It was based upon two statutes that were in conflict.
Because there is no vesting right in the statute. You can't insert a vesting right. If the legislature wanted a vesting right, then they could have written one in there. But it's not the job of this court, and certainly not of the commission, to insert a vesting right which doesn't exist. We can only work with the material the legislature has given us. I think it's also telling that the Attorney General has not asked this court to overrule Shamel or Straight, and the Attorney General did not ask the Court of Appeals to disregard those cases, and the Attorney General did not ask this court on application here for transfer to overturn those cases. So really, I'm left with the question, why are we here? And I think it's happening because the commission simply has chosen to disregard Shamel and Straight. That's not exactly true. That's true sometimes, but not always. and without any rhyme or reason. And the appellant shouldn't be the victim of the capriciousness of the commission.
Well, the reason we're here is because 287.200 says that compensation for permanent total disability shall be paid during the continuance of such disability for the lifetime of the employee. And it now says, instead at the time of the death, the word employee as used in this section shall not include the injured worker's dependents, estates, or other persons to whom compensation may be payable under 020. So it now says it doesn't change the definition of dependents, which, as you note, is determined who's the dependent at the time of the injury, but it says that those dependents are not entitled to benefits and not entitled to step into the shoes of the employee. You're saying the legislature had no right to change the definition of employee, even though the events that triggered that definition had not yet occurred, which is death.
They have the right to change the definition. They just don't have the right to take away what has already been given.
But as you said, there's nothing in there about vesting. Nothing says they're entitled to benefits at that time, and in fact they're not, because it depends on their situation at the time of death, too. They have to have been dependents at the time of injury, but that's not what their right to benefits is based on. It's based upon them substituting for employee at the time of death, and they no longer do.
Had the legislature passed a statute eliminating permanent and total disability as a benefit, would this have eliminated Mr. Gervich's right to those benefits? I don't think so, and I don't think this case is any different.
They have a right to application of the statute in the version that was in effect at the time of the injury.
That's correct.
But our retroactive bar on retrospective changes in the law depends upon your changing the effect of something already accomplished. If there's a future event that also has to occur, it's not simply retrospective. You can look at past acts. If that's okay, did those be taken into account? Here, the death hadn't yet occurred. If the death had occurred, of course, they couldn't change the effects of it after the fact. But here, there had not yet been a death. So how was it a retrospective application of the laws?
Because on the date the employee was injured,
they were a dependent, but where do you get the vested rights? They were within the definition of dependents, but they didn't have any right to any money.
A vested right can be a right to receive something at some point in the future.
But you're
it
saying
does
you
not have
a right
to be in the appellant's hand or in their pocket that moment.
You said you're having a right to no change in the law, in effect, and we have made clear that that bar in retrospective application does not, for instance, if you were married and there were certain divorce laws and you can get a divorce under certain conditions and you had a right to custody under certain conditions, and then before you got divorced we changed that law, you wouldn't have a vested right to the law as it was at the time you got married.
I can tell you honestly, I can't really respond to domestic relations.
Well, I don't know how this is. I'd like to know how. I know you think it's different than that, but I don't see how it's different. To me, it seems like you're saying you have a vested right to no change in the definition of employee or who gets to recover at the time of death. And I understand your argument about if you're a dependent at the time of the injury, then under the statute you're a dependent, they can't change that. But something else has to occur, and if the law changes before it occurs, I'm not clear why your vesting argument works.
Well, first of all, there's never been a rule in workers' compensation under 287 for a right to be vested for a claimant to have the expectation to receive it. Certainly the commission has no right to insert a vesting requirement. The statute itself doesn't talk about vesting.
Well, you're saying it's vested, in effect.
No, the commission uses the word vesting. Believe me, that's not my words.
But if you don't have a vested right, then you don't have a right.
Well, I think the commission is trying to say that. But I think it's the claimant's, the appellant's position that the statute clearly states that on the date of the injury, the dependent has certain expectations under the statute. And if the legislature wanted to go back and take those away, they would have to do a much better job of drafting 287.230 or the amendments to that statute. Because at the time of this injury, The very same statutes interpreted in the Shamel decision were in effect when
and even today, the statute says dependent is determined at the time of the injury because it is, but they very clearly say you don't get to get the permanent total disability benefits when the employee dies. So there's not a tying between those two. The mere fact that you're a dependent at the time of the injury is not determinative. Otherwise, we would not give effect to the new law even prospectively.
Well, certainly when Mr. Gervich was injured, and then the Shamel decision was issued by this court, this appellant had an expectation that she would receive those benefits. And the legislature felt the need to amend the statute so that there would be a change in that benefit. So she had an expectation of receiving those benefits. And the legislature then amended the statute to take that away. But it can't go back and take those away from people who already have that in the statute on the date of injury.
The Klotz case that you cited, is it a workers' comp case?
No, that is a medical malpractice case, which came out of the 2005 changes to the that area of the law.
Because the general rule is that your ability to recover is set as of the date of injury. And that general rule has governed workers' comp as well. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I cite some cases from the 1993 changes in my brief, the 1993 changes in the law, which make clear that any changes the legislature made were from the date of the amendment going forward.
If they're substantive changes, not procedural.
That's correct. If there's something about a timing of filing something, that would be different, but not of a substantive benefit.
In the Klotz case, we decided that the injury occurred before the medical caps went into effect, and therefore the person was entitled to collect the caps before the new caps.
Right. It related back to the earlier date. That's correct. Right. I just want to say, if stare decisis has any meaning, then the commission's award must be overturned and benefits awarded to the claimant, to the appellant.
Thank you.
May it please the court. We agree Mrs. Gervich is a dependent on April 6, 2006, when Mr. Gervich was injured at work. However, that is not the question. The question is the need to substitute as a party. And that need did not arise until April 5, 2009, when he passed away due to causes unrelated to the work injury. And that was after the legislative changes had taken effect. While many relevant facts are similar to the Shamel case, one key fact is not. The law had changed when Mr. Gervich died, and the result is very different.
The law, it's a substantive change, is it not? Because it takes away a right to receive benefits that was granted by the Shamel case interpreting the prior statutes.
I respectfully disagree. I think that the law,
you're saying
the need to
whether
substitute,
or not you receive benefits could possibly be.
No, it's. I'm sorry, Your Honor. It is substantive, but I disagree that it's taking away something that she had.
Well, if in 06 she had a right to collect the benefits after his death, and then saying she doesn't in 09, that's taking something away.
She didn't have the right to collect the benefits he did. It was his benefit in 06.
But she had the right to. The remainder rights.
He?
The remainder, as in the remainder right. After he died, didn't she have a right? Isn't that a right subject to divestment?
I'm not sure how to answer that. I think that she didn't change her situation. I'm not suggesting that she divorced him or that there were posthumous children born, or that they had other children changing, or he had other children outside of the marriage to change her situation.
The only thing that happened was a change in law, correct?
Yes.
And did that change in law change her right to recover after his death?
No, because her right did not accrue, vest, she wasn't able to step in those shoes.
It didn't vest until he died.
He died, yes.
Did it? Why isn't the alternative that it vested when he had his injury, but it vested subject to divestment, that is, if they weren't married or any of those changes in situation occurred? That at that time, that when he was injured, he had a right to recovery under the workers' comp clause. She had a right to recovery at his death.
Her right, though, she has the right, she is a dependent. She has the status of a dependent when he's injured. Absolutely, without question. But her status doesn't change. She doesn't become an employee, doesn't step into those shoes until he has died.
So are you saying that there's a difference in the way we look at it? If this new statute had affected the worker's right, then perhaps there could not have been a retroactive application against him. But since we're looking at a dependent's rights, it's a little different analogy or a different perspective in that when she was clearly the dependent on the date of his injury, she was not a party to the cause of action. In 2006, when he died, she became a party. And so we're looking at her differently than we did if it had been a worker.
Well, 2009, because he died after the changes.
Oh, he died in 2009,
He died after the legislative changes, yes.
I understand that, right. So
yes.
But do you understand my question?
Yes.
Is there a difference in the way we look at it versus she was not a party in 2006? So whatever rights she was entitled to at that time is not relevant because she was not a party.
Yes.
And she didn't become a party until 2009, and then that's when we look at whether or not what her rights are at that point forward.
Yes.
But if you look at, there's an old rule about an interest must vest, if at all, within a life and being and 21 years. And that is determined at the time of the grant of the interest. So in this case, if we talk about vesting, that would be 06. Not 09. The interest would fail at the time of the grant of the vesting interest at that time of the grant, not at a later point in time. So if it's a vesting interest, one could say it's a 06 versus, I'm just saying it's a vesting interest, 06 versus 09.
The question is vesting a concept? Your opponent argues that isn't a part of the statute and that the commission's now wanting to graft a vesting requirement on. Because isn't it that the benefits available are the benefits that are in effect at the time of injury? And it's the full range of benefits, not who gets what divided by one versus the other.
Respectfully, not all the benefits in workers' compensation vest at the time of injury. There's a number of rights and benefits that occur over the life of the claim.
Mm-hmm. But what the law that governs them, I agree with you. I question the use of the word vest. It is the law that governs what benefits are paid is the law in effect at the time of the injury. And if that's not the case, what is the law that says that?
Well, it's the law that is in effect at the time of that the benefit accrues is able to be.
And tell me
accessed.
The law that supports that statement.
I'm sorry, I don't know that I understand the question.
My question is, what law governs?
What law governs in this circumstance?
In a criminal case, it's the law that governs is the law on the date the crime was committed. In workers' comp, what date is it that you set the law that governs that injury and the claim for the injury and the benefits that are available?
at the time the event that triggers the application occurs.
And what law supports that is what I'm saying.
In criminal law, if there's a statute on the books on April 6, 2006 that says I can't scout baseball tickets. But on June 28, 2008, it becomes okay. On April 9, 2009, I'm scouting baseball tickets. It's not illegal because it was illegal in April of 2006.
I think the distinction between your two arguments and why you're not understanding each other is you're saying her right to benefits accrued at her spouse's death, and Judge Brackenridge is saying, and Judge Teitelman, didn't her right to benefits accrue in some sense at the time of the injury because the law at that time said once her husband died, she'd get benefits. So when did the right accrue to get benefits?
But that was her status as a dependent.
But her right depended on some subsequent
event.
Is it comparable to you have an expectancy as an heir when you're born, but the legislature can change the definition of heir, and you can't say, no, it's the law when I was born that's in effect, even though at that point I had an expectancy.
What law do you have in workers' comp that says, because circumstances change as the workers' comp case progresses, as to medical benefits available or whether the person's temporarily, whether the disability is temporary versus permanent. So as those things happen, you only apply the law that might be available at that time. Say I suddenly need medical benefits and what's available to me. The question is, do you have case law that says under workers' comp how we look at the law and when the law is set as to what governs? And if you have cases that say it's when the benefit accrues, when they do it, then what is that law, is what I'm asking.
I don't know off the top of my head. I would be glad to do additional research and provide it.
Let me ask you this question. Isn't it true that you're only entitled to partial disability once you've reached maximum medical improvement?
Yes, sir.
So that didn't accrue at the time of the injury. It only accrued when you reached maximum medical improvement because that's when we know at what point how much you're going to get better, right?
Yes, sir.
So that's an example in the statute of a type of benefit that doesn't accrue at the time of injury.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then and the workers' comp has other benefits like that have triggers, if you will, that determine at what point, at this point, in other words, you're entitled to particular compensation.
Yes, sir.
And looking at Judge Fisher's example, is there case law that says whether the benefits that you are available, the partial permanent disability, are the benefits that are available at the time of the injury, or are they at the time that you've reached your maximum improvement?
I understand your question, and I do not have an answer. I will be glad to find it.
And I guess where the confusion lies is kind of this hyper-technical focus on the physical difference between the employee and the employee's spouse, when the reality is that the prior statute in effect in 2006 defines or references employee as an all-inclusive group of people, suggesting that the benefits payable to the employee persist beyond the employee's death under that version of the statute. And so are you asking us then to separate what the legislature had combined as an all-inclusive definition of benefits payable to the employee and continuing beyond the employee's death by this division that says that once the employee dies, then and only then are these other people going to get the money instead of the employee? And is that really a fair differentiation?
I am very sorry. I struggled following. If the question is, are we separating the what the legislature has done, putting it together?
Well, and it was a terrible question. That's why you had trouble following it. So
sorry.
I guess where I'm going is if the legislature defines benefits in terms of what the employee is entitled to receive, and we all agree that with respect to what the employee is entitled to receive by way of benefits, the law in effect at the time of injury controls. So far, so good?
I still think it's the triggering must occur. The time of injury is one benchmark, but there's other triggers within the life of the
triggering
client.
And would include the example that Judge Fisher's question posed.
Yes.
That certain things like maximum medical recovery would have to occur in the future.
Yes.
You're not suggesting, though, that a change in the law with respect to permanent partial disability sometime after injury would control, even though the triggering occurred later.
Correct.
And you're so right. Why would there be a difference here?
This, we're not changing the triggering event. The triggering event has always been the death. We're not asking that.
But isn't that just stating a legal conclusion back to us? Aren't we asking you, why shouldn't the legal conclusion be the triggering event is the time of the injury? At the time of the injury, this woman, had the law not changed, at her husband's death, would have had a recovery. The law was changed to take that away from her.
I'll grant you, Judge, it's harsh. But she's limited to $57,000.
I'm just talking about legal thought.
There's a cutoff.
You're arguing legal conclusions to us. You're not giving us any basis for the legal conclusion. Tell us why.
Now,
normally, if the state takes something away from a person, the Constitution requires it to pay for that right. Was this a right that the state, if they took away, would have to pay by inverse condemnation?
Wow. I don't think that the legislature can give it, they can take it away.
They can take it. How about your house? Can they do that? Can
you're
they take your house away without compensation by changing the law of your property rights? You haven't
under
sold it
domain?
Yet. Can they do that?
Under eminent domain? Can they just take it away?
Can they just take it away?
They can't without compensation.
Not without compensation.
Now, can they just take away a right if I'm an injured person in a normal negligent action? If I have a car accident down at the bottom of the hill, prior to my recovery, can they take away my right of claim against the person who hit me?
No. It's not Mr. Gervich's recovery. It's Mrs. Gervich's recovery.
Which I think gets us back to the question that was asked by Judge Martin, which is...
The very bad question that I asked.
But, and if you would restate it regarding the definition.
To the extent that the prior version of the statute tells us that the benefit is to be paid in a certain manner. It is the employee's benefit, but at that time, the employee was defined to include a class of people, the employee and the employee's defendants. Why wouldn't that control the determination of the benefit? Because you can't change the benefit for the employee by some subsequent change in the statute. You look to the time of injury. The mere fact that who the check is written to may change doesn't alter that it's the employee's benefit as of the time of injury, does it?
I'm sorry. I am sure I'm just very tunneled on this. But it's I cannot get past the need to substitute.
I think what the question is there a need to substitute, or does employee always include the spouse because that was the definition at the time of the injury? And so when later on the definition of employee was changed, was that in effect taking away from the broader all-encompassing definition of employee rights that all those who originally fell in that definition had? So that they, even though the triggering event hadn't occurred, and therefore, it would be error to have given her the money prior to the death of her husband. So the statute is not consistent in what it says is the definition of employee. If you look at under the definition in the statute at issue at the time of the injury, she was included in employee. So when there was an award to an employee, wasn't it really an award to her? If that's true, that's where you're...
That's my disconnect.
Then wouldn't you be taking it away from her?
I think, though, even under 230 at the time, there was a terminated at the life. So I don't think they're taking something away from her that she had before.
Because, say that again?
Because even under the old statute, it terminated at the death.
Okay.
And I think with... The 240 statute and the 230 statute, I don't believe were in necessarily in conflict, because the 240 statute is a death benefit and it presumes a death. And the 230 does not. The 230 statute deals with the ones that are unrelated to the work injury, and 240 is specifically the ones that are related to the work injury.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So did she have a right that could she just demand the money immediately and it shouldn't have gone to her husband because she was an employee from the date of the injury?
Well, under the reasoning in Chamo, she didn't step into those shoes of employee until his death.
But you said she had a right immediately.
She had a right upon his death if she was alive. So if she's still qualified under 240, which although...
So she wasn't the employee for all purposes, then they couldn't, even under those parts of the statute that says I'm going to pay, you have to pay the employee X amount of compensation, she wasn't an employee for those purposes.
Well, certainly she's not eligible for temporary total disability benefits or future medical.
So the statute does draw distinctions between the injured worker and the spouse. They're not all simply considered a single employee, amorphous employee?
Well, she's considered the employee only to the extent that she's eligible to receive those permanent and total disability
benefits. And when is she eligible?
Upon the employee's death.
So then do we look at the definition of who's eligible at the employee's death, since that's the event that makes her eligible?
Well, according to Shamo and 240, we look at who's a dependent at the time of the injury.
No, they looked at the definition of employee at the time of the death in Shamo. They did not look at the time of the injury. Shamo looked at the death and saw what the definition was, and it included dependents. So they looked who was a dependent, and the statute then is now said dependents are those who were dependents at the time of the injury. But it looked at the definition of employee at the time of the death.
So I'm not sure what your question is.
We didn't write the statute.
So. As I said before, we can only work with the material the legislature gave us. But we can't inject or presume what they meant. We can only, and they did not put some sort of vesting requirement in the statute. Judge Price said,
Under our terminology, you're arguing, really, it's to your benefit, or you're arguing it vested at the time of the injury, because you're saying we can't change that, which what you're calling expectation is what we call vesting.
Okay.
Accrued or whatever.
Yes.
The right came when the employee got injured, and we limited the definition, not the future dependents, but not the definition the statute did, to the dependent at the time of the injury.
That's correct.
Yeah, which would be different. For example, let's just say that the husband in this situation had what might eventually be determined to be a permanent total disability. But let's just say he died before he reached maximum medical improvement. Under that set of circumstances, the wife wouldn't have any expectation because he didn't get the benefits.
That's correct.
And the legislature could do that if they wanted to.
Well,
Maybe they did. I'm not saying they did or didn't. Maybe they did. But your situation is different because he was entitled to it. It was determined at the date of injury, and he was entitled to it. All he had to do to make her to be entitled to it was die.
Well, first...
But not from the injury.
First, he had to show that he was permanently and totally disabled.
Correct.
And he didn't know that on the date of injury.
Right.
As we talked about earlier, that's one of those things that comes about later in the case.
But when you prove it, and you've got your claim for permanent total disability, that's when it's etched in stone as to who gets what, whether your dependents have a benefit or not.
That's correct.
Why is that the case? As opposed to why don't you look when he dies and it says if you die, then...
Because I believe 240 and Article 1, Section 13 of the Constitution says you look at what the employee, what any derivative claims are entitled to on the date of the injury.
You've said that you don't like to talk about this question in terms of vesting, de-vesting.
That's
why
correct.
Is that, and what other terms would you prefer to use as
well,
a concept?
If the statute talked about vesting or triggering events, as the Attorney General does, then I would be, but the statute doesn't. So they do talk about accrued or unaccrued. There are other what benefits are
due. You're saying her right it accrued. Is that a good word for you?
I think her right accrued on the date of injury, depending on how the claim progressed.
But how can it accrue if it's still dependent on subsequent things?
Well, just like all benefits do.
Right. He could have ended up being only partially permanent disabled.
He could have been. We don't know.
And then, I'm not sure what the death benefit is, if any, for permanent partial. But
so let's assume he was only permanently partially disabled, and that was determined at hearing. I think we would all agree that the dependents would be entitled to any unpaid benefits for that permanent
that
partial
had accrued.
All of his permanent and partial disability. Okay,
because it's for a number of weeks.
It is.
So those weeks are determined. Boom, he gets it. The difference is total goes until you die, and then there's a benefit afterwards.
And if there are dependents.
The general rule, when you look at accruing, isn't the general rule that substantive law in effect on the date the claim accrues governs?
Yes.
And so it's when the initial claim accrues, that's the date that sets what law governs.
And so how do we determine when her claim accrued? Because the difference between the two of you seems to be, did it accrue at the time of injury or did it accrue at the time of death?
Well, let's take Judge Price's example of the auto accident. If the person injured in the auto accident had a spouse, she had a loss of consortium claim, which accrued on the date of the auto accident. But she may or may not have a claim. We don't know how significant.
So tell me why my right to inheritance doesn't accrue on my birth. I mean, because I have a right. All you got to do is die. It seems really similar to me.
Again, I really don't want to venture in that area.
It says it doesn't accrue until death, and then you look at who's an heir at the time of death. Why is this different than that?
Well, if the statute was written that way, then perhaps we would. But just as this court in Shamel didn't do any sort of exercise investing, I don't think it's appropriate to do it in this case.
The event is not the birth of someone. The event is the death of someone that sets what law governs. Is that the answer to Judge Disklin?
In a inheritance situation, sure.
Or under the statute, but that's my question. Why isn't it? I mean, I know you think it's not, but I don't see why. I'm not clear why it's different. And I should reveal that I wrote the dissent in Shamel, perhaps. But I am aware of that. But I'm unclear why this is different, because it says it's only on the death that you're substituted for the employee.
Well, you're determined to be a dependent on the date of the injury. Your rights are determined. What benefits you may or may not be entitled to are determined.
Depends on if a dependent is substituted for the employee.
Well, under the statute,
it doesn't say dependents get it. It says the employee gets it, and this. So it depends on if employee includes dependents at the date of death.
Well, again, if you're going to read 020, 200, and 230 together, and including that unless clause at the end of 230.2. If you're going to read it as the statute was written on the date of the injury in this case, which are the same statutes that you analyzed in Shamel, she steps into the shoes of the employee for those benefits.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.